All right, everyone. Welcome. Another Thursday night right here at Grumblings Media for another episode of Free For All. I am your host, Big John, and I'd like to say I'm going to be just as interested in finding out if my co-host, the Hoedman, is actually able to speak through the magic of web broadcasting. Hoedy, how you doing tonight?
I am going to use my magical powers, and I am sure any technological nerd is very offended that I've referred to it as magical powers. People work darn hard to hear this kind of voice on the internet, you know?
It's a soothing voice for sure, Hoedy, and glad we can have you, as usual, joining me here on the show. All right, everyone, as we mentioned before, as you could see by up there, the title, this is Free For All. Here on Grumblings Media. Catch us for a lot of great content on our YouTube, Rumble, Facebook, X. We live stream on those platforms. We have another, we have a whole catalog of content, Hoedy, some gaming stuff, some paleo stuff, sports, a little bit of everything just to keep you entertained. You can catch all of it at grumblingsmedia.com, grumblingsmedia.com, as it says right around here somewhere at the bottom there. So you can catch us on just about anywhere. As always, we're open and encouraging of questions tonight, Hoedy. If you do have some questions, feel free to pop them in the chat of whatever platform you're catching us on. We'll be happy to bring you on for the conversation, answer some questions, have a nice dialogue or whatever passes for dialogue on the screen, Hoedy. Hoedy, so, you know, it was kind of interesting this week. We decided to talk about what could we talk about in terms of a theme? You know, like, we like to have themed shows because if there's one thing I hate, Hoedy, it's cacophony. You know that, right?
Sure. I mean, that's why we don't call the show the free-for-all. We don't want just anything. Oh, shoot.
Indeed. Right. So, yeah. So, basically, what I'm trying to get at is we actually put a little prep into the show. We said, let's come up with a theme. And the theme for tonight is, Hoedy, what appears to be the fracturing of the political party system in the U.S. at this moment. Now, is that overly dramatic? Perhaps, but hey, we needed a theme for the show, so that's what we fell on. So let's start off with this, Hoedster. Both the MAGA / Republican Party, and I think it's unfair to call it the Republican Party at this point. It is, for all intents and purposes, the MAGA Party right now. The MAGA Party, the Libertarian Party, suffering some schisms, some tears, some fractures, fissures, whatever you want to use. And people are starting to say, oof, look, we've had enough. We've said that before, but we've had enough. And I just want to toss around some ideas here. And let's start off by what has been perhaps causing some of this fracture, some of this splitting, some of this divisiveness. So let's start off with, at the top, let's start out with our own brood, the Libertarians. We've had our internal battles. We all know that. From a political perspective and an ideological one, but especially from a political perspective. So, Hoedy, as everyone knows, we had the whole situation with Angela McArdle, Michael Heiss, and their cronies essentially bankrupting the Libertarian Party, leaving the current chair and the current LNC with a flaming bag of poop, and they're trying to build something off of that. How do you when you kind of get your pulse? Because I know you got your finger on this pulse, Hoedy, almost like some sort of nurse. What's your sense of the Libertarian Party right now? How are people feeling about it? Is there hope? Is there doom and gloom about the outlook of the party? I'm not talking about winning the White House or anything like that. I'm just talking as a functioning political party. Where do you think the LP is right now in terms of sentiment?
Yeah, I wish I could paint a rosier outlook for it. I think, unfortunately, we got hit real hard, and the hope was that we'd have another – the people who take over after learn all the lessons that, oh, that was a mistake. Let's get on the right track. But as, you know, I noted when we talked to Stephen last week, Steve Nicola, the current chair of the Libertarian Party, dropping the ball. We haven't posted about ICE in years. We haven't posted about mass deportation since like 2019. This would be the equivalent of going through the COVID crisis and not saying anything about lockdowns or mandates. Like, right. And we were too timid about the lockdowns and mandates, you know, for a political party. The enthusiasm's not there. Memberships are down. And they are continuing to go down even after McArdle and everything. Now, this is probably by design. As McArdle said, she worked with the feds. The feds don't want to see a healthy Libertarian Party competing with the Republican Party.
And by the way, let me just cut in there for a second, Hoedster.
Yeah, yeah.
When you say we know she worked with the feds, you're not being glib. You're not being...
No, she said it, yeah.
It's not hyperbole. Like, yep. she is on video admitting to this, right?
Yeah. She was... let's see here. She was on... she went live. I forget the person's name. It was a specific... It's one of the leaders. Well, forget. I will look that up later.
That's okay. But what I meant was, yeah. It's like you're not employing hyperbole. There was
correct. An
event where she was yep. recorded saying, like, hey, this has been a plan of mine mm-hmm. for a long time. You know, yes, I work with the feds, despite all the accusations I hurled that other Libertarian Party members of being correct. Feds, which once again just proves you are what you rail against most often in politics. But I didn't mean to interrupt you. Yeah. Go ahead. Please continue.
It's all good. This was for those who are interested, if you want to look it up yourself in case it's like that. And there's no way she said that. It's her speech with the Free State Project just a few months ago. Anyway. So, you know, we would hope to pick it up, but we're essentially dropping the ball. And I think, you know, I voiced this to Stephen and I know he knows this, but just we haven't seemed to learn this lesson. We're not, of course, like alt-right anymore, but we're still like far right and we need to get back centered. And so this is, if you're right or far right, you're in Trump's pocket, right? Like there's no right. reason to be libertarian if you were kind of like, oh, we're not going to get economics no matter what we do, and I'm socially conservative. We shouldn't even be trying to compete with them, right? We should be getting people who are excitedly, you know, socially progressive or at least socially for your freedoms and economically for your freedoms. You know, call it capitalist if you want, but free market at the very least. And we should be excitedly both. And we're kind of doing neither. You know, we've got the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. We dropped the ball on that one. We've highlighted right. a couple like, oh, it increases the deficits. But let's talk about it making ICE and the IRS branches of the military with, you know, with capable of striking powers without authorization, capable of warrantless surveillance over people. That this is... And so, unfortunately, there's just no – like, people are like, why would I be a libertarian right now?
Right.
And it's really a shame that we're dropping the ball right now because, as we're going to talk about, MAGA's – people are looking for something else. And the fact yeah. that we are not sitting here as a viable alternative – I joined the Libertarian Party originally as a disaffected Republican. And I was grateful to have a robust Libertarian Party that found me, that I could talk to, that I could interact with, and I looked right. at their messaging. And we're just not doing it right now. I wouldn't turn to the Libertarian Party right now, even as a defective GOPer. And it's a shame, and it all has to do with our messaging and our culture. And we've been, you know, you've heard me talk about it a lot. We are trying to fix it, but it's not in a good place right now, and we're right. down. If Stephen is successful with Project Archimedes, hopefully things can turn around. But if not, we're certainly we need to make some big changes if we're actually gonna pick up on any of these people.
Yeah, I agree with you. And internally, this is the issue. There is no consistent messaging, and there's no stances, like you said, bold or otherwise. You know what I mean? I think there's a lot of conflicting direction. And at times, trying to be everything to everyone means you're nothing to no one, right? So to everyone. So you can't – that's where I sort of – I agree with you. But I would even say like, okay, even though I disagree with it, if the LP messaging was right now was Austrian economics and social what you call it, social permissiveness or social tolerance. Let's add, yeah. That might be a better phrase, right?
Oh, it's okay.
Like Austrian economics and social tolerance, right? A lot of people would disagree with that within the Libertarian Party, and that's fine. But I think at least that would be a consistent message. And it's a consistent message that actually puts you as a differentiator from the duopoly, right? Because MAGA, no way are they socially tolerant, despite what you might hear, right? And in my opinion, they're economically ignorant, not savvy. They're not Austrian economists. They're not free trade advocates. They're not free marketeers. The Democrats are just a hot mess, no matter how you look at them, right? So to the extent that, at least from a messaging perspective, I think you're absolutely right. We've dropped the ball. And I think part of it is that we don't have a consistent message. And I know we had Stephen on last week, and he was talking about Project Archimedes, which, again, I agree with. I think you do try to employ that. But when you're doing that outreach through Project Archimedes, and this is where I think – I don't know that he did it deliberately or not, but he never answered the question. What's the messaging? What are you going to – what is Project Archimedes the hammer and the nail would be the message? So, okay, so now you've got Project Archimedes, you've got a good hammer, but what's the message you're trying to nail home, right? And I think that we never got a clear answer to. So that's where I see it falling short in our own party. But we're not the only ones. And at a time of turmoil, political turmoil for the Republicans, for MAGA, we should be taking advantage of it. Right, the same way they took advantage of, by conspiring with the Mises Caucus and with Angela McArdle and whatnot to really take the party and drag it all the way over to become MAGA Lite, or in some cases worse than MAGA. We're not taking advantage of that. So quickly before we talk about anybody else. You did say you want to see bold messaging. Do you think that bold messaging, though, should center around what? All of your freedoms all the time? Hey, we're the economically responsible party. We're the only ones who have supported all your rights. You know, like, and this is totally conjecture in your opinion that I'm asking for. Where do you think that messaging should lie? I'm going to put you a little bit on the spot. Where do you think that messaging should be?
Sure, I'll answer. I'd be interested in hear what you think as well. I'm going to go ahead and say this. We have been committed to a thin libertarian messaging, which is minimalist, which is not saying I don't want to teach you anything good. I just want to call out like bad things. When you come off as constantly picking, nitpicking the other side, you come off as just people, Democrats are going to say you're Republican, Republicans are going to say you're a Democrat. Now, we say that about ourselves, libertarians, a lot, that it's like, oh, that's just part of being a libertarian. The other side thinks you're on the other side. But it really shouldn't be. And this is a problem in perception for our part. And so what we need to do, in addition, I'm not saying we abandon calling out when the other parties get it wrong.
Right.
But we need to also talk about our visions for the future. We need to have thick libertarian messaging, which is,
right.
Hey, are you Jewish and celebrating the Passover? We're really grateful for that. And then it's like, but that means you also have to celebrate the Christians and Easter and Muslims and Ramadan. It's like, yes, yes, and yes. Let's celebrate all those choices all the time. I would love for us to be a welcoming, embracing party for everybody, all kinds of groups, all kinds of people, and this is something we break the rule sometimes. We're confident enough. And what's funny is the times we break the rule are our best issues. Drug reform, criminal reform, gun control, right? Like these are issues that our party is – these are our best messages, and they're the ones that we actually have a vision on. We actually can speak positively to something as opposed to just saying, no, this is done wrong. No, this is done wrong. And so we need to be much bolder about – people being free from the government's encroachment and other issues. We need to take that same no hesitation about supporting your right to own a gun and also say no hesitation supporting your right to marry who you love, live as a trans person, live as a straight person, live as a Christian, live as a Muslim, live as, you know, let's go ahead and reach all those people. And I'm not saying to play identity politics, but at least to make them understood you are welcome here and you are loved here. Right now what we are doing, and I make this analogy a lot, so you'll have to forgive me, but if we're not supposed, if the pool is gross and we're not supposed right. to jump into the pool, so like stay away from the pool. If we are constantly like, by the pool, all it takes is a small push. Right, exactly. Small push to push us in, and we've fallen in several times. The Libertarian Party, this is our, I guess, second time that we've fallen for mainstream government candidates because we're goofing off near the pool because we don't want to tell people, get away from the pool. We don't want to tell people, hey, guys, instead of being by this dirty water, let's go over here by this clean water. Because people get offended. They're like, well, you can't tell people to be by clean water. It's their right to get as close to the dirty water as they want without going in. Sure, maybe that's their legal right, but as a cultural and messaging perspective, we should be pushing people to get by the clean water, the good messaging, the this is a great, healthy libertarian way to live your life. Your thoughts on the same question.
Yeah, you know, I've been struggling with this. What would be the most effective? So the place I typically start out when I say something like that, it'll be like, what converted me into libertarianism, formally, right? And much like yourself, back in my youth, but my youth was, you know, 50 years ago, it was being a conservative, what at the time I termed myself as a Goldwater Republican, right? Barry Goldwater for you youngsters, right? So I kind of had myself in there, which was pretty much conservative, except maybe for the, like, the rah-rah aspect of it. And what drew me over, and I've said this again, much like yourself, I'll repeat myself on this, it was Milton Friedman. I loved his style. I loved his dedication to liberty, to freedom. The Chicago School of Economics. Now, again, it's not pure Austrian economics, but I think the Chicago School is more accessible to more people when you could give them clear examples. It's also not as extreme, which kind of flies a little bit into what you just said, taking bold stances. But I think when everybody is plain vanilla, you know, you don't have to be some weird craft flavor of ice cream to be bold. You know, being chocolate when everybody else is vanilla is bold enough, right? So I'm kind of like that. Like, so for me, it was the messaging that Milton Friedman had, the way he could talk to people almost like your grandfather and have that folksy storytelling style, you know, sort of like the libertarian Reagan, right? And I think what we need is a lot of that. And when I look at people and how they message, like politicians that message that way, you know, Larry Sharp falls into that category for me. You have someone like Lars, who I think can get there if he works a little bit on it, you know, in terms of his public speaking and you know. But I think these guys have the thing, right? They're not timid by any stretch of the imagination. But they understand what resonates with people and where you start them off on their libertarian journey, right? You're not – if someone is completely foreign to the ideals of libertarianism – you don't start them out with the debate on whether Hoppe is an idiot or not. You don't start there, right? You start with, hey, there's two types of people in this world. People who want to tell everyone else what to do and people who don't want to be told what to do. Which camp do you fall in? Just very simple question. Which one do you fall in? I think you would find that an overwhelming majority of Americans would say, I fall into the camp that says, I don't want anybody telling me what to do. Okay, start out from there now. Get them to understand that if you claim the right to autonomy, you claim the right not to be hassled by anybody else, you must offer that as well. Get them to understand that. Get them to understand that there's a conflict. When you say get rid of all these illegal aliens, only citizens have rights, so on and so forth, at the same time, you can't square it with, well, the government doesn't give me my rights. The government only protects them. Well, does that apply only to Americans or to anybody? You're claiming human rights. So unless your claim is only Americans or humans, why are these immigrants your foes? Again, worry about the details later, but get them to understand the basic proposition of libertarianism, which is individual liberty. It's the proper use of violence. when is it applicable? When is it not applicable? What constitutes violence? What doesn't constitute violence? And you start to, maybe I think that's the messaging we need. Like I've often said, half as a joke, but half serious. I think the best president you could put in the White House is a Milton Friedman Free to Choose series on loop. Eventually, he'll solve all your problems for you if you just watch that series from 1980. Healthcare, tariffs, trade, policing, economic growth, getting rid of the Fed, minimizing the Fed. Like all this stuff, monetary, it was all in that series. And he, and the lessons he taught in 1980, 1979, 1980 still work today. So to me, I always lean on that. That's the approach I would take. But and then once people are in, once they consider themselves libertarian, then we could start attacking each other over the last 5-10% of the road, whether Ancapistan is a flight of fancy, a tangible reality, whether the Free State Project can deliver this Ancapistan to you or not. You know, that to me is the final, on a 10,000-mile journey, that's the final mile. I'm not worried about that mile. I'm worried about, like, how do we get people to understand that the duopoly is one of the worst blights on this country that is still around there? And we could talk more about that. But I think right now, when you start talking like, how do we pair with this blight to make it less blight for us? Do you know what I mean? That doesn't make sense to me at all. How you can like say, I want to be part of this duopoly because, hey, I'll be the one person out of the 10 million that have already tried to convince them of the error of their ways. It ain't going to happen. It's not in their interest for it to happen. You kind of have to take what you can. And I'll use this to segue a little bit, Hody. That's why you take what you can and you do pounce on the errors of the duopoly, because I think there's value in that. I know you're a little bit down on that sort of approach, but I think you could be inclusive while still using the failings of the duopoly to highlight why you offer a better way. Case in point, you look at the one big bloated bill, right? Republicans, MAGAs are doing handstands and cartwheels and whatnot. Wow, we finally got what we wanted. We told you to trust in President Trump. I don't know why I would trust in a triple divorced serial liar, pathological liar who hasn't done anything else in his whole life. I don't know why I would put my trust in someone like that, Hody. I don't put my trust in anyone, least of all someone of that dubious nature and character. But what has this bill delivered? Well, it hasn't delivered. We've gone over this. It hasn't delivered on a deficit reduction, right? The tax cuts they did put in expire. Like very quickly. The nationalist bent on this is absolutely nuts, right? Whether it's giving American babies an $1,000 savings account or whatever that USA bond or whatever that thing is called, part of the big beautiful bill, to creating the 14th largest army in the world. I'm talking about ICE, to your point. It's been funded and authorized to grow to be the 14th largest army on this planet. It has more funding and more resources than the U.S. Marines. It has more than the armies of France, Italy, and Spain combined. Why do we need that to patrol on domestic soil? I don't think any of us are being overly draconian or dystopian when we say it's not to round up illegal aliens, this thing. That's the excuse, but it's for something probably far more sinister. So we should jump on that. But you know what's interesting, Hody, and I want you to tell me a little bit about this, is one big bloated bill actually started what might end up being the demise of MAGA in the midterm elections. Talk to me a little bit about, by focusing first on the big beautiful bill, and then we could look at some of the repercussions of that.
Yeah, I mean, when Trump first started out, obviously for a libertarian, it wasn't good right off the bat. But, you know, I'll be honest, even Republicans and Democrats agreed on border control and stronger immigrant control. I can't stand it. That's a subject for a different show. At the moment, we're just talking tact. That, and so I understand why that might have been okay. But then you see this One Big Beautiful Bill Act, and this is a monster. We've already covered it specifically in another free-for-all. It's worth checking out that episode, listener,
right.
If you want to check that out from our other free-for-alls. I cover it pretty well. But that bill, unfortunately, some of my favorite parts of it totally gutted. As you mentioned, right. Those tax cuts, I love them. They slapped a cap on them to expire. What, 2028? That's just 3 years, right?
Yeah.
The no taxes on tips, put a $25,000 deduction limit on it, basically takes away the point of it. Because the whole thing was, well, if I declare my tips, I want to be able to declare enough so that I can, like, admit that I make the full amount that I make, and then I'm able to buy a house. Now all of a sudden I have to pay tips after 25,000, and there's only so many that qualify, and you know it's only employer tips that count. It's just like it's such a mess. They muddled like what was easily my favorite part of it, and I mean, and what you alluded to, it started off as a $4 trillion price tag, and they had to bump it up to a $5 trillion price tag to bribe all the Republicans to continue to vote for it. And this was like just a nightmarish situation if you are a fiscal conservative at all.
Right.
And look, I'm going to try to give MAGA some credit on this one here. They call it fiscal conservatism, right? They thought Trump was actually going to be the one to stand up to the bullies. He hinted to ending the Fed. He hinted to abolishing the income tax. Maybe he even hinted at doing away with the IRS entirely, that we'd be able to outsource it to tariffs, until this bill comes along and turns them into another branch of the military, gives them unbelievable powers right there with ICE. The IRS has exploded in this bill, and they're, and not only in money, which is a right. huge chunk of it, money sure. and personnel, but their capacities, their ability to commit warrantless surveillance, right. their ability to spy on people to make sure that you're paying what you should be paying, you know, without authorization, unauthorized and warrantless, you know, that to just, if you feel like spying on people, hey, you're the IRS. That's, you know, your prerogative. And MAGA, you know, this is one of the things that libertarians share with, you know, fiscal conservatives. And, you know, we're not betrayed. We were never on his side. But I understand their feeling of betrayal if that was kind of a significant portion of them. They like to lean in onto the libertarian thing. If you look up, Donald Trump is still recognized as the most famous libertarian on the planet. It drives us crazy, but
of course,
he is.
Yeah.
But, you know, we lean on that, and people kind of know what they mean is like that fiscal libertarianism. And this just ended the illusion of that. And so I think this was kind of the first major domino to fall, because it was Trump's proposal, right? And it got worse. They wanted to see Trump's proposal be like, let's end the IRS. And then the compromises will keep the IRS, but significantly reduced.
Right.
Instead, Trump's proposal is, let's expand it. Let's get this deficit high. Let's keep this, you know, debt ceiling
right.
rising, and that's not what they wanted to see. And so I was happy to see so many fall off, or at least kind of you saw the cracks there, even if you didn't get the complete fall off there.
Well, what's interesting is it's one of those things that because you have total control of the government right now, meaning all three branches of government, you have no excuses. You have zero excuses. And to me, this is where the grift becomes the most evident, where the MAGA grift becomes the most evident, right? So there is no one to blame for this not being hammered through, if it's what they want to do. Now, again, there's a lot of the original premises of the Big Beautiful Bill, like you said, that maybe I could have gone along with. Some of the Doge stuff I could have gone along with. But we'll transition into the Doge issues in a second. But MAGA, I'm not even going to say Republican anymore. MAGA, to me, despite the proclamations of its like paid social influencers, is fracturing, in my opinion. Is it fracturing enough to damage them? That I'm not sure of, but it is fracturing. It's fracturing over the economics of it, right? Because to your point, hey, I thought these tariffs were supposed to like basically pay for everything, right? And despite like this contradictory sort of economic data that you're getting, you have to keep something in mind. Trump has well earned the nickname of Taco. Trump always chickening out, right? That Wall Street trader thing that got pinned on him, right? Because he slaps these tariffs on, then he takes them off. He sees that the bond market tanks, he takes them off. He has the worst start since 1973 for the devaluation of the U.S. dollar, down 11%. See, a lot of people don't look at those types of metrics. They'll look at the stock market. They'll look at interest rates, maybe, right? But they don't look at these other underlying things, right? And you never heard Bessent say, here's why the U.S. dollar losing 11% of its value since Boss took office is a good thing, right? You don't hear any of that. You just hear this nonsense proclamation of how tariffs are the, you know, nobody else in history had thought of tariffs except for these guys, right? So you do get that. And I think a lot of people are starting to look into that. You know, their research has talked about eggs a lot. So, like, you know, the dumpy blonde girl at the podium, whatever her name is, will always say, look, eggs are down everywhere. And the price of gas is 22 cents a gallon wherever you look at, you know, like some ridiculously low prices that don't exist. I think she quoted under $2 at one point. Trump quoted under $2 as being the national average, nowhere near that. But anyway, my point is that I think despite what they're being told right now, Americans are saying like, this may not be disaster, but it's not what we voted for initially. So on the economic front, especially with this bloated bill, I don't think they've delivered the way they should. And it doesn't ring true that the Democrats, that the libtards have somehow, they're the ones responsible for Trump not getting his way, right? That's not the case. House, Senate, White House, all aligned, all political, all for better or for worse. And that's why I think you see the constant harassment of Thomas Massie. You know, he stands up to them in the House and says, this is nonsense. It's another, like, okay, give me this at least, right? Show me where the debt goes down, and then I'll vote for some of this nonsense. But show me the plan for knocking this down. Nobody can do it for him. They send him a rescission package of a couple of billion dollars, which, again, is like a flea on an elephant's behind, right? It means nothing. But it's somehow Thomas Massie's fault. Same goes for Rand Paul in the Senate, right? So you can see where economically this isn't lining up. And this is causing other stress points, right? And the next one I want to mention is since it's more recent, the Epstein files. You have to, you know, MAGA, and I'm seeing a lot, even some of these, like, right-wing talking heads on social media, the ones that are getting paid by the White House, they're starting to break from the official narrative because a lot of them have built their social media base, Hody, on the, like, hey, there's all these pedos in office, there's the dark, deep state, there's this, there's that, everybody traffics children in Washington, Comet, pizza, you know, all the conspiracy Q crap, right? So that was a huge part of their campaign trail. Who's the goofy guy at FBI with the weird looking?
Cash Patel,
the guy who runs all, the guy who spells cash with a K and wants to sell you a whole bunch of T-shirts right up until he was nominated for the FBI post. That's the guy that has all the truth, folks. Him and Dan Bonino, another Rumble star. These are the guys that actually knew what was going on. And during the campaign, they promised us, everyone, that they would release the secrets. And also Pam Blondie from Florida. They're going to release the secrets of the Epstein file. What was it? 3-4 weeks into the administration. Hey, we'll release this stuff. We're going to give you names, MAGA America. But here's the issue. There's some leftist anti-Trumper in the Southern District of New York. He's hiding the Epstein file. He's keeping it from us. See, a lot of people forget about that. They, in essence, got the resignation of the guy in the Southern District in New York, the guy who handles all the Wall Street fraud cases and all that. The Southern District of New York might be, if not the biggest, one of the biggest jurisdictions. They got that guy to resign. I mean, those images of him walking out of his office with the boxes and his staff in tears and stuff, because the claim that we're not hiding anything, Pam Bondi went on there and said he's lying, and I'm sending the FBI over there with trucks. They're loading everything up, and we're going to release this stuff, right? Hey, Odie, where is it? Where is all that stuff?
Pam Bondi's desk is going to be the answer for any time something goes missing. Where was it? Oh, I must have left it at Pam Bondi's desk. So the trouble with this is this was – I was researching this specifically today. I found this great blog post about it. It's from this – it's from a MAGA guy, Aaron Everett, and it was reposted by Jessica Reed Krause. So these are two Trumpers, right? These are two – I mean, people that have photographs with Trump and Kennedy, and that they're all about those guys. And this is their breaking point. And we say, you know, and so I was interested in that MAGA perspective. Like, and you know, they're far from the only ones, but I really like the insight is they were like, we believed in Trump as being like this outsider. And he gets referred to that. Yes, he's a crude tool. He's a liar. He's crass. But like, he's that crass tool to use against the bad guys. We always thought he was our side. Yeah.
He's the monkey wrench. Yeah.
You know, and we're going to throw the wrench in the system. So we can't defend everything he does, but like, you know, at least when he's, you know, he's being against the establishment when he's behaving badly. And so we can put up with the bad behavior because he's against the establishment. And so this whole thing was really what he calls it is basically a litmus test. And the idea was this, we just wanted to see that he was on the side of the little guy because it makes no sense. I love the way he describes it because he says this most average people, we're dating or married, you know, we're trying to raise our families, raise our kids. And it's inconceivable that these Washington people will hop onto a plane literally called the Lolita Express, fly out to an island, have sex with an underage child, right? Like, and then get a, you know, a massage. And then fly back and then make that trip like 10 times during their lives, right? Like some of these guys. And it's just unbelievable that that is not only Donald Trump. It's not only Bill Clinton. It's not only Robert Kennedy. It's like a whole bunch of people within the intelligence community. It's a whole bunch of people within the military industrial complex. It's a whole bunch of people that have had cabinet positions. Like, we have these flight logs and we just say those people are getting to live a different life than us. Now, in hindsight, is it absurd that to trust a guy who's literally on there seven times, flying on the Lolita Express seven times, to entrust him to say, oh, this is the guy who's going to expose everything? Well, of course, he doesn't want to expose himself. Like, that was kind of always a foolish idea. But there was still a hope there. In fact, you know, according to this blog post, and I'm taking it for what it is, it was Trump's third most made promise was to release this list, right behind securing the border and ending the wars, was releasing the Epstein list. So this is not a small promise that he's breaking. It's one that was reiterated multiple times. And as you've noted, reiterated not just by him, but throughout the entire administration. And it would be one thing to say, hey, listen, we really thought there was a list, but it turns out there wasn't. The issue is they're lying. They said we had it, but now it's gone, but now it's here. They said the cameras weren't working. And then they were like, oh, no, the cameras actually were working, and they don't show anything.
It's just missing 1 minute.
Yeah, and then it's missing a minute just skips. And then I had to share that because you can tell the film has been cut. It's not that, and what Pam Bondi said, that the film just like, oh, every minute just skips a minute because the clock timer's wrong every day, but it's not cut or anything. You go and you look at it, and I do a better job in Photoshop splicing two videos together. Like, it's clearly been cut. And so, like, I mean, and we know something happened here. It's the first time in the history of New York with 50 plus years of forensic experience that somebody's neck has broken in three places in a suicide. The first time.
Yeah.
Talking thousands of cases, and it's the first time that's happened. Now, who could you have learned this from? You could learn it from me, but you could have learned this from Kash Patel or Pam Bondi or any of these guys who, you know, Dan Bongino, like you said, like these guys who were talking about it just recently. So this is really like a massive stab in the back to everybody because it's not like they're lying about it in the same way that the other administrations lied about it. And Trump was supposed to be different. You know? Yeah,
that's the key, Hody. To me, like, look, I, you know, our my partner William Del Pilar, right? He says, well, I don't know who actually killed him. Maybe nobody killed him. Maybe somebody killed him, probably. And you know what? I'm not prone to conspiracy theories, so I'll give you maybe he didn't die. I don't know. I can't make an assessment. Neither can you nor anybody who wasn't there, right? But here's where even the lowest information voter among the lowest information voters in MAGA, they're saying, wait, there's a logical disconnect here. There's a contradiction here. Up until the election, you guys had the goods. You were going to release them. You get into office. You fire the guy that you said is keeping you from the names. Then when you tell us there was no suicide, it was also the manner in which they told them, right? When Bongino and Patel sat down with what was her name? The old money honey from CNBC, Maria Bartiromo.
Oh, yeah.
What was their position when they told you that nothing happened? It was like, listen, I think the quote from, was it Bongino said, I've seen suicides. Trust me. This was a suicide. There's no there. Trust me. Take my word for it. Cash Patel, hey, I'm the one who told you I'd tell you, and I'm telling you. You got to trust me. There's nothing. In other words, they're asking for the same trust that they denied their opponents in the campaign. And now they're saying, trust me. We're not the deep state. Oh, God, no, because we told you we're not the deep state. So that automatically means we're not the deep state. And I think that Joe MAGA, sitting somewhere with his high school education, who knew all about vaccines and who understands everything about tariffs and all that, even someone like that can look at it and say, hey, one of two things is happening. You either lied to me during the campaign or you're lying to me now. I don't know which one. Or maybe I guess the third possibility might be you lied to me both times, right? But even those folks who view Trump as a god, because I think Trump is actually skating on culpability for this. I don't think MAGA has turned on Trump because, like I say, he's their big daddy. He's their Lord and Savior right now. But so I don't think – I think Trump is Teflon at this point. I honestly do think what he used to say, that he could shoot somebody on Park Avenue and get away with it, you know, in the middle of the day – I think that applies here. I don't think this blowback is falling on Trump, because a lot of what I'm seeing anecdotally is, oh, the deep state is preventing Trump from doing this. He's trying, but they're not letting him, whoever they happens to be, right? So I don't think Trump is getting it, but this is Trump's last term. He ain't going to be around much longer. He's an 80-year-old man. So the Bonginos, the Patels, the Bondis, the other Barbie they got running around, Christy Noem, right? All these people, they either lied to you during the campaign or they're lying to you now. It's inescapable. So I think that is also what's driving a lot of this. It's like, can you at least pretend to give us an answer? Give us something that isn't in a logical contradiction in the same statement. You know, it's like, give me something. But anyway, before we move on, do you have anything else you want to add on the Epstein?
Yeah, well, they did pretend to give you an answer. Remember, this is they wanted their cake. And so they got their right-wing influencers together, flew them out to the White House, gave them a whole bunch of binders that had information that was already available on Google.
Right.
Minus and intentionally removed the pages that had Donald Trump's name on the flight logs, right? Like, they wanted the credit for it. And they again, since we're kind of trying to see it from MAGA's point of view, to their credit, they turned on the influencers. They were like, this is nothing. Guys, we already knew this. And they forced the administration to say, hey, listen, we've got the list. We've got tens of thousands of documents that we're going through right now. We're sorry we didn't actually give it to you then. We just wanted to give you like a little amuse-bouche, you know, and then, you know, we'll release the rest of it later. But I think the important thing here, and one of the reasons that MAGA is really turning on this is, and I know that you and I talk trash about them, and they are, we talk about them being cultists and everything, but really on a base level, think about this. There's a lot of parents, you know, in MAGA.
Sure.
There's a lot of boomers. There's a lot of people who love their grandkids. There's a lot of people who love their children. And what we're looking at here is they are actually finally kind of taking the blinders off and looking at this evidence. And if you look at the memo that the Department of Justice released talking about this, they said very specifically that we thought it was only a couple hundred victims on Epstein's Island. And looking at the documents, it's thousands of victims. Right. It's thousands, or it's over a thousand. I don't want to say thousands, but it's over a thousand victims, right? So like five times worse than we thought it was. And to combine that with saying, sorry, but these people aren't going to get any justice, right? Like we found out there's more, but there's no justice. And get this, not only are there thousands of victims, but they also said tens of thousands of videos and images of these children being sexually assaulted, right? So what's funny is they are almost telling in this memo that yes, there was blackmail, right? Like, there's no reason you take those videos and images otherwise, you know? But, like, of these victims, Pam Bondi even tried to dismiss the day by saying, like, well, he could have downloaded some of it. But the problem is that the memo itself explains that when they saw these pictures, they recognized them from Epstein's Island, which is why the number of victims are now over 1,000. So, again, Bondi's just lying to protect her boss. But what are they protecting? And MAGA is like, man, these are kids. And what did we do the same day where we said we're not going to release the list? Listen, maybe you think it's unwise to ever release a list. All right. Let's just say you make that decision. We're not going to release the list to the public. What did they do to the people in those images and videos, the people who are on charges? They dropped all the charges. They are telling us literally in this memo that we have the evidence. We see the people. We see the rapists on the camera. We see them. And we're going to let them go now. We're going to drop the charges against them now. It's unconscionable. Like, and this is something that MAGA is putting two and two together here. And they're saying, look, it's one thing to be conspiratorial about the suicide, right? Like to be like what I believe 16% of Americans still believe Epstein killed himself. Fine, that's their right, right? We don't know. But we have to be honest with ourselves when we look at this memo. We are being told that they are seeing sexual assailants, that they recognize them, that they say, yes, we have the videos, whatever. And instead of prosecuting them, we are making the calculated decision to drop all the charges and let them go.
That's bad.
That's bad. I mean, that's human beings, right? Like, I don't need to humanize, dehumanize, whatever, MAGA. Well, you know, they don't like that.
Well, you know what's interesting? I think you and I responded to the same tweet. It was a clip of Bill O'Reilly talking with someone where you said, look, I know, I've talked to the people who've seen this, I've seen this, and the reason they're not releasing this, it's not what you think, it's because there's innocent people whose names appear on that list who had nothing to do with Epstein's behavior, so we don't want to lump them in with the people who did do. And my simple question was, great, if that's really the case, then why don't you release just the ones who were part of this thing? Why don't you release the names of the actual offenders? Fine. You want to keep the guilt by association, which I agree is a thing. Fair enough. Redact their names and release the ones that you know you're going to charge. No. See, again, it doesn't pass the smell test. And I think, again, whatever you ultimately think might be the truth, it's these self-contradictory statements that even the most – I'm struggling not to use the words I want to use, Hody. But let's just say the most naive of MAGA supporters are now faced with this ugly reality. Like whatever the truth may be, you're getting self-contradictory statements from this administration, deliberate or otherwise. They just don't line up. Right? Why is Ghislaine Maxwell in prison if there's no list, if there's no trafficking that you could charge? Why is she? Who did she traffic to? Who did she traffic for? Is she in jail only for trafficking to the dead man, to Epstein? Is that what she's? I mean, I honestly don't know the answer to this, but I think people have a lot of those questions. And if you could question everything from red dye and whatever else MAGA questions on a consistent basis, this cannot, to me, and to your point, give them credit. They're not buying the complete story, and they're standing up to it. Again, I think they're giving Trump himself a pass on this, a huge pass on this, but they're starting to say something isn't adding up, right? And if we move on from Epstein, because I do want to move on and tie it all together, you had the blow up between Elon and Donald Trump. And this was solely due to what Musk viewed as a betrayal. The Doge betrayal, the financial betrayal. Now, it became evident to me that the billionaires who lined up with Trump, each one had their pet agenda that otherwise they may not have supported Trump, but because they were one issue people this time around, they formed the coalition. So with RFK, it was the whole MAHA thing. Like, hey, I've been a lifelong Democrat, but if you support this MAHA thing for me, I'm with you, Trump. Yeah, I could do that, sure. With Musk, I think it was, hey, if you support reducing the deficit and all that, I'm with you. I'll support you. Yeah, sure. Well, yeah, yeah. I'm the king of debt, but I'll reduce it. Don't worry about it. And with Vivek, I think it was immigration reform, but we'll keep the H-1Bs where they are. So don't worry about it, Vivek. You know, we'll help out with this education and everything. We'll get it right. We'll hire the former CEO of the WWE to run education. We'll get it right for you, Vivek. Well, if you notice, when the first immigration kerfuffle started, Vivek, over a weekend, disappeared from MAGA. No longer part of Doge. But he took sort of like the restrained way out, in my opinion. He just faded in, no big deals, no accusations, a sort of an understanding that if you leave me alone, I'll leave you alone, and I'll kind of try to run for governor in Ohio, right? And this came after the immigration thing where they turned on Vivek on immigration, where he's like, whoa, 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 I thought we were only getting rid of the gang members. Why are we getting rid of these highly skilled technical workers again? Why, you know? And when it came to Musk, like you saw the first snap a couple of weeks ago when he first claimed the reason you're not getting the Epstein list is because Trump's name is on it, right? And they had their little spat. Trump threatened to cut off all his subsidies and this and that. They kind of made up, and it was quiet for about 2 weeks. And then when this big bloated bill passed, that's when all hell broke loose. Trump said, this is BS. I'm not supporting this anymore. I will primary anybody who supports any Republican that supports this big, beautiful bill. And then finally, after Trump threatened to strip him of his naturalization, because you can't make this stuff up, right? We are now talking about a president stripping citizenship away from political opponents. So he kind of threatened that. And Musk said, like most of the things he does, Mike Termott and I on Liberty Lens, we kind of joked about this. Musk will make his decision via next poll, right? And the poll was very simple. Should I start a third party, the America Party? Overwhelming yes. Guess what? We now have a third party heading into the midterms. So, Hody, I ask you, how much of an effect do you think this America Party is going to have? Is it sustainable? Now, I'm not talking to you about success necessarily, but is it enough to cost MAGA? Meaning that even though they have control of everything, razor thin margins. A lot of the Senate votes have been ties broken by Vance. The House can barely afford to lose, what, three or four Republicans in any legislation. So Musk doesn't have to flip a lot to make a difference. Actually, if he just flipped one or two Senate seats, he's probably accomplished more than he could have ever hoped for in 2026. So do you think he has any viability, any path to viability at all?
You know, you can obviously cover the spread as a third party. Obviously, as libertarians, that's the best usually we can pride ourselves on is
right.
Saying that we covered the spread and we might have spoiled it for the other ones.
Right.
I would say with Musk, he's got kind of the opposite problem of the Libertarian Party. The Libertarian Party is established, has ballot access, has been around for a while, has some, you know, and because of that, we have certain advantages in the political arena, but we're broke. And the America Party will have the exact opposite problem. They will be wealthy, but they will also be starting fresh. Listen, there's been several wealthy people who have tried to start new political parties, right? we've talked about the Forward Party, the Liberal Party started out, right? Like, and then you've got all the smaller ones, the Pirate Party and stuff.
Oh, you had the Reform Party from Perot in the 90s, right?
Reform Party is a good example. I don't want to forget that one. I'm thinking of like within the last 4 years, but certainly, you know, and the Republican Party at one point was a third party, you know, so I don't want to discount the possibility of third parties at all. But we've created an atmosphere since then that essentially makes it difficult to actually win at all. But can you fracture things for people? Can you certainly play spoiler? Sure. Libertarians, per dollar, we always get the most votes per dollar. And it's not even close. It's like everybody else is like getting like 0.03 votes spent per dollar, and libertarians are getting like 4.8 votes spent per dollar. So dollars do go a long way. You can certainly advertise in embarrassing ways if you're well-funded and you're an official political party, even if you can't get on the ballot. Now, as far as if Musk will actually do it, I don't know. William Del Pilar actually has a great kind of rant about this, and that Elon may even steal more from the Democrats than the Republicans, which is kind of how it goes a lot of the ways with third parties. Because Elon Musk is, I mean, let's be honest. Why was he mad the first time? Why was he mad the second time? He didn't get his subsidies, right? He got, and his consumers actually got stripped of their credits for their vehicles, right? He got mad and then he realized, oh, wait. We can still, the bill's getting fixed. I'll calm down. I'll play it cool. But then they decided to leave that part in there. And so he got hosed the second time and then got angry again. Right. So listen, that's big government stuff. You know, this is not necessarily like you know, it's funny because he's trying to make it out like we're the deficit conscious party or something like that, that he wants to do. But this entire rift is happening because he wants a big government subsidy on his business, you know? Right. So,
and he's not a libertarian, because I saw some people say, hey, let's reach out for him. You know, like I could see where he might reach out to the Libertarian Party because, like you said, we have the infrastructure. I mean, assuming McCardle doesn't come back to finish off what she started, but we do have significant ballot access, we do understand the mechanisms. We've been at it for 50 years as a party. But he's not a libertarian. He may align on one or two issues. But like I, you know, in talking to William about this, and talking to some people about this, I've always said this, and I kind of hit this. I think I remember telling you, Elon will last at most 6-7 months in the Trump administration, because I've seen his persona before. I've seen his type before. He's basically an engineer, and I think a brilliant one, quite honestly. But he's an engineer. His thing is to solve problems with no moral sort of trappings around it, right? So it's like, I want to send people to Mars. I want to build rockets. I want to dig holes in the ground. I want to build electric cars that work, right? What's the best way? As an engineer, what's the easiest solution to get everyone to switch to electric vehicles? Oh, give them subsidies. Sure. There's no principle behind it, right? But I always used to think it's funny saying, like, how does a guy who makes a point of posting one Milton Friedman clip a day, basically, about tariffs being bad, about the free market being good, about capitalism saving the world, right? He posts all that stuff and gives it the thumbs up and all that. And the next day, he's standing grinning like an idiot behind Trump telling you that tariffs are going to save the world, or that immigration is bad for the economy, or that China's catching up to us when we have more than double the size of their GDP. So you knew something was up. He was playing a game. He was trying to solve a problem. But I knew. I just told William. I told G, also one of our colleagues there on Fired Up. I said, wait till he turns on you guys. And by the way, when he turns on you guys, it won't be that he turns on you. It'll be that he'll continue the path he was always on, and it'll just butt up against whatever you guys are trying to accomplish at any given point. By you guys, I mean MAGA. And that's exactly what happened, right? Like, he was, like, ostensibly, he's trying to keep his subsidies. He's trying to reduce the deficit. He got Doge started. It was his idea. We're going to identify these savings. Once we identify him, you guys got to pass the bills. Hey, we got the Senate. We got the House. Let's do it. Oh, we can't do it. We don't want to do it. We'll only do it if it makes Democrats look bad. Blah, blah, blah. Now, I get your cynicism about, hey, maybe it all did come down to his subsidies. But at least in terms of what he said publicly, which was defensible at least, was why are we still going further into debt? I was told that this bill, at the end of the day, would be a net positive. It would reduce the debt. It doesn't. So anything else you do, much like what Rand Paul has said, much like what Thomas Massey has said, so I can understand why he eventually butted heads with Trump, because Trump is notorious for not having any sort of plan or having any sort of principles. He's a populist, pure and simple, which is both good and bad. It's good right now because he's starting to offer amnesty for immigrants, which is another thing that, for some immigrants at least, he's floating the idea around, which is also throwing MAGA off track. So I could see where Elon fell off the MAGA wagon. But let me ask you this. Instead of starting a third political party, do you think he would have been better off starting a super PAC to target people who voted for this bill? Do you think that would be a more effective use of his efforts?
That's probably more what he wants. Like, in theory, that's probably more what he actually wants to do. And the best he can think of is a political party, because he's looking at a Republican Party that is kind of rotten at its core. Right. And he's thinking, well, maybe the best way to hold them accountable is to fight fire with fire. Whereas, yeah, a PAC is probably a better way to go about it. To be like, we'll just give money to the people that are the good guys to help them overcome the hindrances to the Republican Party, as opposed to, you know, starting a new party and then you've got all those obstacles as well. I think you're spot on in your assertion there.
Do you think there's an opportunity for libertarians to sort of get some shine off of this? I mean, last week, Nikayla was saying, like, hey, I kind of tweeted a couple of things at Elon while he was ranting against the Republicans. It got some good play for us, which I don't doubt. I mean, I'm sure it did. Do you think there's an opportunity here for the LP if they latch onto the right messaging, the right timing? Do you think there's an opportunity for us to grow our numbers?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think everybody has that moment. If you come from the Republican or the Democrat Party, which is the majority of libertarians, the majority of us aren't born with it. We find our way here. And how do you find your way there? Usually it's some terrible thing. And you see the Libertarian Party saying, hey, that terrible thing, we are so against that. And we are so for this other thing. This mass deportation things, it was popular when Trump took over. It is not popular anymore. And so, yes, we may have missed our, like, being right at the right time about it. But, hey, better late than never. Let's go ahead and bring up our principles. Share the platform planks, you know? Like, let's talk about how we believe in the right to free migration. And that's just one aspect. Now, need to talk about the debt, need to talk about deficits, need to talk about how this functionally hurts people, how they can afford less things. We can talk about the GDP and tariffs and how that has impacted things. There's a lot of Democrats that are sick and tired of being fiscally stupid. And there's a lot of Republicans that are tired of being bigoted. Now, of course, if you collectivize both parties, you may say, well, how many is that really? But the thing is if you're collectivizing the parties, you've kind of already lost. We're not going to take 50% of the Republicans and 50% of the Democrats and form a new party here. But we can take 5%, 10%, 12%, you know, 5%, 10%, 12%, whittle that down and put them all with the Libertarians. I think this is an amazing opportunity right now, because we have a Democratic Party, as you mentioned, is in total disarray, completely dropping the ball. And then we've got a Republican Party, and MAGA's done with them, right? Like, MAGA is fractured. There's the cult of Trump MAGA, and then there's MAGA, and they don't know whether it's the deep state or Trump was always the establishment or what it is, but they're fractured. And there is no reason why we can't poach both of them right now with the exact same messages by being like, hey, you guys on the right, are you sick of being, like, bigoted? Are you sick of supporting wars even though you say you won't? Aren't you sick of the establishment? These are things we already know that they are, right? Like, these are things they're already sick of. And then we turn to the left wing and just being like, man, don't you guys, like, support, like, free markets, right? Like, aren't you sick of, like, the price for loving my gay cousin is that I have to put this country in financial destitution? Like, they're so tired of that. There's so many of them that are tired of that. Now, listen, Big John, I'm going to be honest with you. What we need to do then is be willing to say, hey, listen, they won't love maybe all of our messaging. Okay, but the Republicans and Democrats deal with that. Do you think the Democrats agree with all Democrat messaging that comes from, like, the Democratic HQ?
Yeah, of course. You're right.
Put out the boldest messaging you can, and you know what? You're going to have some libertarians that one out of every 10 things we say, those libertarians are going to go, oh, I don't really like that, though, the whole immigrant thing. All right, you know what? Make your assessment, though, because you know what? People will get over the 10% if you stand for something, right? Like, just be bold about it. I think we're wasting a valid opportunity, but I will go with what you said. It is not too late. We just need to be willing to make those bold stances right now.
And that's where I think, again, the messaging becomes so important. I mean, the execution matters, but I think the core messaging, like, I don't have a sense of what this party stands for by its messaging. Do you know what I mean? I mean, like, I don't understand who we're trying to attract. Like, are we still trying to attract the MAGA crowd, the old MAGA crowd that McCardle was working for? Are we trying to attract them? Are we trying to attract the Sarwar crowd? Are we trying to – do we need to go back to Gary Johnson even? Do you know what I mean? It's like where are we? You know, do we go to that old fiscally conservative, socially liberal, which I hate that trope, right? But is that the one that's the entry point for people into the Libertarian Party to get to that 90%, 85% agreement with our principles, right? Because I think that's where the messaging matters. And listen, maybe Project Archimedes, I mean, it should be sophisticated enough for this, but it's like, hey, when I'm trying to pick off Republicans, I'll focus on the economic issues. I'll focus on the personal liberty issues. And if I'm targeting Democrats, maybe I focus on the social issues more. Maybe I, you know, put in support for immigrants. Maybe I put in support for gay marriage and all the other stuff that the right wingers find abhorrent. And maybe you kind of reverse it because it's not inconsistent with our beliefs of individual liberty, but it's tailored to the audience that needs to hear it. And I think that's when you hear me bitch about messaging, Hody, that's what I mean. You know, like, because the actual message itself, it's an execution to how you're going to get people to listen to it. But what are you trying to impart on them? Like, you know, that's my thing, right? Like the immigrant issue. The debt, the economy, the wars, those are core issues that we should be messaging the hell out of, but with a consistent message. And to your point, if that pisses off 10% of libertarians in the LP right now, maybe that's the price we have to pay. I don't know. Does that make me a prag?
Maybe, but what's wrong? I mean,
oh, by the way, I don't consider that an insult. I know a lot of right. other libertarians do. I don't, but like, does that make me a prag? Maybe. I don't know. That's fine.
I mean, there's nothing wrong with being pragmatic as long as the results are there, right? The reason we had issues with the old prag crowd is they didn't have great results. You know, they kind of took a knee during COVID a little bit, and that was unfortunate. And so it's, I think there's an incredible pragmatism towards being a radical. Right, that's what makes sense. And I'm not talking about bold offensive messaging. I'm talking about bold, like, inclusive messaging. Bold, like, be bold. I'm just scrolling through the Libertarian Party's feed right now, and it's really I would think that this is like a crypto scammer account if I were to have to, like, if I didn't see, like, who it was, you know?
Really?
We started doing the 31 Days of Tyranny. And like, that's a little bit confusing because we haven't followed up on every single one of those days. We have a flag that we posted 4 hours ago with, the stars are replaced by something that says E the Times 03 January 2009 Chancellor on brink of second bailout for bankruptcy, and then a whole bunch of weird cryptic letters, and we reposted it. We posted it 4 hours ago. We reposted it again. Like, this is a confusing message. I get that, like, it's trying to say that, like, we're kind of spending too much. But even then people are in the comments being like, you stole this from another person. I don't even know this was worth stealing and right. not giving credit to the person who did it, much less reposting it 4 hours after we did it.
Right.
Like, I'm not going to nitpick every post here, but it is a, like, I don't get the sense of what this party is when I scroll through the wall. You know what I mean? I get the sense that this is like maybe a somewhat conservative party that will occasionally say the Republicans aren't good enough and we're the real America first over here or something like that, you know? But it is, yeah, this isn't something that makes me like, yeah, liberty, you know what I mean? Like, oh, I was wondering where you guys stand on ICE, you know? Like, nothing like that. And it's just a little... I mean, we're kind of strike. Like I said, this is a bad time to strike out because people are looking for other parties right now.
Yeah, I don't know if it's just me, Hody, but I would be focusing on as a strategy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Start out simple, you know. Start out simple. Say every day, LP national media team, we're going to do the following. I want to find one Republican talking point I want to refute. I want to find one Democratic point I want to refute. And I want it done from a libertarian perspective. And I need to hear what that's going to be. So if we're going to be anti-transing kids without parental consent, fine, we're against that. And here's why, from a libertarian perspective. And if we're going to be like, hey, we're sending weapons to Ukraine again, that's bad because, and then explain why from a libertarian perspective, I'm down for that. But you, that's okay. You can rail against, you know, it, on some level, anger is an energy, but do it professionally. Do it, if possible, do it in a viral way, but do it professionally. To your point, the easiest way to go viral is to deny the Holocaust. It's one of my favorite sayings that you came up with. I use it all the time. I hope you don't mind my stealing it from you. Hopefully there's no copyright on that. But the point is very valid. If you say stupid crap on X, you will get engagement. You will get followers. You will get retweeted. But then you're known for stupid crap. That's what you get known for. So if you're the LP, what is the messaging you want to put out? Right? Like we always say, LP and H, okay, they get following. They may, quote, have the most engagement of any LP handle. But what are they known for? What do they make the rest of the LP party known for? Nothing positive. Nothing positive. So what are we trying to put out from national? I get it. State affiliates, loose connection there. I get it. But I'm saying from national, what are you going to say? If you're coming to me and I'm a data scientist and you say, hey, help me fine-tune Project Archimedes 2.0, target the people that we want in the party. Great. Who do you want in the party? You know, we want disaffected Republicans, disaffected Democrats. Great. What issues am I targeting them on? Once I target them, what do you want me to send them? Like, I don't think people have thought that far ahead, as ridiculous as it sounds, because all they've thought ahead to is, how do we use Project Archimedes to target these people? Great. What are you going to bombard them with? What are you going to influence them with? And this is where we come back to where we were at the top of the show, you know. That, like, I don't understand, right? And like I said, you and I could differ on what's bold, what's practical, what's pragmatic. Fair enough. And that's, I guess, part of being a libertarian. We're never going to be anywhere near aligned as Republicans and Democrats are internally. That's fine.
Yeah.
But what is the core message? What's the 80-20 message? What's the message that gets the foot in the door so somebody else can be part of the people arguing about the final 10%? How do we get those people in so they can take a side in the last 10%? How do we get those guys in? And that's my concern, Hody.
Yeah, I think – I mean, great stuff. I think that there's a large contingency of Republicans who are Christians, who know they're supposed to love their neighbor as themselves and know that their party has not been, even if they've been participants in it. I don't want to write off – even MAGA that has been participating in a lot of this bad stuff. Because I think sometimes you feel captured by it. You know, when I was with the Republican Party, I certainly had, you know, my anti-gay talking points. I certainly had my anti-immigrant talking points. But, you know, when I saw the door, I took it and I found myself very excited to be like, oh, finally, I don't have to do this anymore. I don't have to say this anymore. You know, and that makes me sound very calculated, but in my mind, I wasn't you know, I believed the bad things I said when I said them, but they were very weak beliefs of mine. You know what I mean? Like they weren't there fully. You know, I think the idea is that the Democrats are all a bunch of socialists and they're so, so committed to socialism. But if it's like, man, I mean, Democrats, they want a world where like the poorest are taken care of. And if that's not a libertarian society, we should just abandon libertarianism. Right. And as much as ye do to the least of these, we do unto God, you know, and we should. And this is something that the Democrats, I mean, liberation theology, you know, this is something they strongly believe in. And this is something that like we don't obviously I wouldn't phrase it this way because I'm not assuming everybody's a Christian. This is just kind of my thoughts. But, you know, that there's a way to talk to them in a way that's like, hey, listen, yeah, you might not be used to talking about like free markets. Yay. But you are used to saying, man, help, these pills should not cost what they cost. This surgery should not cost what it costs. And my goodness, the libertarians have a great answer about that. You know, it might not be the typical Democrat answer, but Democrats are kind of done with the typical Democrat answer. We've had typical Democrats in office and it hasn't gotten the results. They're looking for a way to get those pills, to get those surgeries for people who are hurting, for people who are in pain. You know, the Republicans, same thing. They're looking for, you know, fiscal conservatism. They're looking for restraint. They're tired of the reckless spending. And yeah, maybe they show up to the party and then find out we're pro-immigrant and they go like, oh, I didn't know that. And maybe the Democrats get in and find out we're pro-gun and they're like, oh, I didn't know. But if we've got their foot in the door and we can't close the deal, shame on us. You know,
it's our fault at that point. If you've got their attention and you can't convince them of the superior message you have, then you failed. I agree with you on that. And yeah, like I said, I don't want to beat a dead horse too much, but I would say that it is to me the messaging, and then the execution becomes almost an afterthought, quite honestly. I mean, after we left the air last week talking to Stephen, we actually talked for another hour, folks. There was actually a second show after the show that aired, right?
Over an
hour. Yeah, over an hour where we just had a good, honest conversation with Steve. And, you know, there were a lot of things he didn't realize. Like I was telling him about software that allows you to streamline your messaging and you know, have an approval process and make sure. So because when I rewatched that show, there was a lot of times where Steve said, well, I didn't know who wrote that message. That message that came out on the official account, I don't know who wrote it. I don't know who came up with it. Because if I had done it, it wouldn't have come out that way. Whether you agreed with the message or not, I think we can all agree that the person who essentially owns the account, I'm personifying him as the owner of the account, there's no circumstance under which he should say, I didn't know what was going out. I've never heard of that post before. I don't know what that post was referencing. That should never happen. And the fact that it does happen is very disturbing for a lot of reasons. One is for the consistency of messaging. The second is for accountability. That if you don't know what's going out, hey, man, you got bigger problems on than whether to convert a handful of Democrats and Republicans. You just aren't running your organization professionally at that point. And I think that could also be an issue. But again, fingers crossed. I think – I don't know. I don't want to speak for you, Hody. I like Steve. I like Steve and Nikayla. I like Paul Dar. Like, I think these are good people. Now, whether they can come through and kind of – and they're in a tough spot, admittedly. They inherited a garbage dump of fire. But I'm pulling for them. I want them to succeed. I really do. I really want them to succeed. I hope they can succeed. I hope they can, you know, to the extent that they might listen to us for 10 seconds out of their lives, maybe that's something they could take away. You know, maybe come across with some consistent, solid, pro-liberty messaging, and I think we'll be just fine. All right, Hody. I didn't even realize this show fly by. I'm looking at it. We've gone more, almost an hour and a half. This has been a very fast-paced moving show. I hope you've enjoyed it, Hody. Any last words before we sign off?
No. Guys, thanks so much for tuning in. I appreciate everybody listening to the Free For All on Thursday nights. It's always a ton of fun to talk about stuff like this. I liked your idea to kind of talk about the America First Party or the America Party and then talk about all the reasons. Because I was like, we've got so many stories. And you're like, I think we can use that as the umbrella. It was such a good idea because I was like, boy, I wanted to talk about all these different things. Hopefully we continue to get so lucky to kind of have a free-for-all that free-for-alls that have a central theme around them. But
yeah,
that was a great talk. I appreciate everybody for tuning in, and I look forward to seeing y'all next week.
Absolutely, and thank you again, everyone, for joining us. Don't forget, we're here on Grumblings Media, grumblingsmedia.com. You can check us out on YouTube, Rumble, Facebook, and, of course, X. Until next Thursday night, when we'll have another show here for you, maybe with a guest, maybe not. We'll see what transpires. Until that time, peace, everyone.